In diesem Jahr werden über 10.000 Elektrofahrzeuge für Amazon-Lieferungen in ganz Europa eingesetzt. Für Lieferungen wie Fußbälle für junge Kicker. Ich weiß nicht. 10.000 Elektrofahrzeuge und es werden immer mehr. Basierend auf geplanten Fahrzeugen unserer Lieferpartner in der EU und Großbritannien bis Ende 2026.
Aber was ich noch erzählen wollte, meine Nichte kämpft sich ja ganz schön das Studium. Semesterbeitrag, Laptop, Bücher, Software, Handy, Internet. Ey, so ein Master ist echt teuer.
Ach, sag ihr, sie kann sich das zurückholen.
Ja, du meinst von der Steuer absetzen, ne? Aber sie verdient ja nicht.
Egal, Zauberwort Verlustvortrag. Macht sie ganz einfach mit Wieso Steuer. Und wenn sie dann arbeitet, heißt es Katsching.
Das geht?
Safe. Wieso Steuer?
Hol dir dein Geld zurück.
Jetzt kostenlos ausprobieren.
From Gimlet, this is Reply All. I'm Alex Goldman.
And I'm PJ Vogt.
Welcome once again to Yes, Yes, No, the segment on the show where our boss, Alex Bloomberg, comes to us with something from the internet that he doesn't understand in the hopes that we, internet experts...
Internet experts?
I know, it feels pretty bad to say that. In the hopes that we, compared to me, two people who have decided to make a show where we try and explain things from the internet, explain it to him.
Alex, what have you got for us?
I have a tweet for you, but... This is something that I sometimes do where I have a tweet that I believe I understand that you guys are not going to understand.
Is it a tweet that is about sports?
It is. I want to show it to you because it's like one of these ones that's like sort of captioned.
I can try to read it.
Okay.
It's by somebody named Michael Cayley at MCA of A. And it's like a split screen image. On the left is Natalie Portman. And it's like grandpa meme font, you know, where it's like impact font with like white letters with a black outline.
Grandpa meme font.
Yeah. Like the fonts that like people's like old relatives use when they're like passing around stuff about like Hillary and like also Trump. You know what I mean? Like it's like your most, it's like meow cat meme font.
It's like, yeah, the can I has cheeseburger font.
Yeah. So anyway, it doesn't matter. It's a font. You,
by the way, it's I can has cheeseburger and it's lolcats.
Okay. So on the left side, under this much discussed font, it's a picture of Natalie Portman and it says NBA superstars, they'll now offer max on tracks.
It's like contracts without the C, max on tracks.
And then the other side is, I think, Jonathan Safran Foer, the author. And then on his forehead, it says the Knicks.
How could you identify Jonathan Safran Foer by sight?
I don't know. A life spent occasionally reading books.
That's way more embarrassing. Than,
also, he came to my high school once.
Than not talks. Knowing what lolcats are.
So, and it has 88 retweets and 646 likes, and I have no idea what this is about. Alex Goldman?
Yeah, I'm clueless on this one.
Ask me.
Alex Bloomberg, do you understand what this tweet means?
Do you understand this tweet that you brought to us so that we won't understand it?
I do. We're in sports, guys.
Okay, so what? How do we do this?
So here's what's going to happen. Ready?
Yeah.
So this tweet actually encompasses two different worlds. And we're going to, and the one world that is professional sports specifically, the NBA, mm-hmm. and I'm going to handle that part. We're going to get to that later. I'm very excited about that.
Right.
But before we get there, we have to take a tour through this other world, and that is the exotic world of New York literary publishing. Okay? And for that, I have a special expert who's going to come in and help us. Reply All producer Jessica Young.
Nice. Hi, Jessica.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Jessica.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, of course.
So Jessica, I told these guys you are going to handle the first part of this tweet, right? So we just kick us off here.
Yeah, sure. As you guys know, I used to work in book publishing, right?
Yes.
I actually worked at this one publisher that had, because there are a few, I guess, literary blogs that kind of gossip about the industry. And one of those blogs was at this publishing company I was working at. And so we just loved to talk about Jonathan Safran Foer.
Why?
Before that, as someone who's never read a Jonathan Safran Foer book, who is he?
You've never read a Jonathan Safran Foer book?
I know that he wrote a book called Everything is Illuminated, and that's it.
Oh my God. I'm so excited to bring you guys through this. Okay. In 2002, he came out with this book called Everything is Illuminated.
Yeah, and he came to my high school.
He came to your high school. And by the way, this book was his undergraduate senior thesis at Princeton.
Wow. This is where I remember it was one of the first times where I like realized that there were going to be a lot of people in the world who were like a lot smarter and more accomplished than me. Because he was like this guy that came to our high school. He'd already written this book and he was like as old as people who I knew. And everybody was like, oh, the book's a genius book.
And then he very quickly becomes this guy that's just the epitome of successful young writer, right? He marries Nicole Krauss, who's also a very like commercially successful, critically successful writer. And then he starts to just get like 7-figure advances on all of his novels.
That's insane.
It's insane. And this is kind of a side note, but there's something, I feel like this is probably common in other industries too, but there's something in book publishing where everyone's like obsessed with real estate. They'll like post blog posts of people's houses if it's like on Street Easy or something. And I.
And say what?
Look at how much this person's house is worth?
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. I still remember all of the rooms of his house.
Can you talk us through some of
That's
the rooms
legit
of his house?
Creepy.
I mean, it's crazy. Okay. His house, which he got in 2005, very soon after Everything is Illuminated. Uh-huh. Has the biggest private garden in all of Brownstone, Brooklyn.
Whoa.
Right?
Whoa. How big is that?
Do you want to see it?
Yeah.
I have it. Hold on.
It's not that big.
I feel like this is like a very short
it's
turnaround.
It's as big as an average garden in Savannah, Georgia.
But look at that.
Oh, that is crazy.
Yeah. It looks like the grounds that someone would like stride around when they were convalescing. Like it looks like, you know, like olden days when people had to go to wards.
Yeah.
So he has like a good amount of fans, but there were also a lot of people that started to resent him.
Because he was like the successful person who everything seemed to come really easily to, and he had a house with a football stadium-sized garden.
Right. Yeah, yes. And I mean, I think it's also just like he became the emblem of everything that people resent about the literary industry, which is that it's skewed towards like a certain kind of person, right?
This, people from Brooklyn named Jonathan.
Yeah, yeah. Like a white dude that lives in Brooklyn that went to Princeton.
Yeah.
And I mean, there was so much hate towards Jonathan Safran Foer at this point that there was even a term for it. It was Schadenfreude.
Enjoying the pain of Jonathan Safran Foer.
Yes. Any kind of downfall, people were just cheering on the sidelines. So Schadenfreude really hits its peak around 2009. He publishes this book called Eating Animals. It's his first nonfiction book.
I remember this book. I remember not reading this book because it was like why you should be a vegetarian with all the like horrible like PETA stuff. It was just like, I do not need this book in my head.
Yes, that's exactly right. I read it when I was in high school.
Did you become a vegetarian?
Okay. You know. You know my eating habits. You know, like I...
You could be a vegetarian now because mostly what you eat is like
candy. Okay, well,
breakfast candy, lunch gummy candy.
The only meat you eat is like gummy hot dogs.
Wow, this is turning to like a huge shame session now.
No. This is just what it's like to be behind the mic with us. It sucks. You feel naked all the time because people are always pointing out your weird flaws. Welcome.
I would just call these attributes.
No, I call them weird flaws.
Well, I read it when I was probably in 9th grade, I think. And I... The only thing that I feel like it feels similar to is like when I discovered what hell was, you know, when I was a kid and I was like, I need to be a Christian or else I'm a bad person.
You just felt like a moral panic and shame.
Totally. Exactly. And so, I mean, I think that there were people that were like, these are really good moral arguments. But then there was this other group of people that was like, this totally overlooks, you know, class and money and how expensive it is to be a vegetarian or a vegan.
Also, just like the successful person whose success comes easily to is now writing a book telling everybody what to do.
Yes. Right.
Would be a not super terrible way that one could feel about it.
Right. So there are people that don't love him, Jonathan Safran Foer. But there is one person that does love his work, and that is Natalie Portman.
Natalie Portman.
I know a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah.
This is like one of my favorite horrible things that has happened in the world.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
I don't know anything about this.
She also seems like, in a very different way and on a very different level, I think a lot of things people feel about Jonathan Safran Foer, they feel about Natalie Portman. Like, she's this very undeniably talented person who's also, like, has had a lot of success and had a lot of privilege. Like, she went to Harvard. She does all these different things and she does them really well. Like, someone who from outside, it seems like things have always come easily to. And, like, either you really like them or that drives you crazy.
Right.
Like, totally. They're from the same fancy island in the sky.
Yes. Yes. And Natalie Portman is really into his new book, Eating Animals. I mean, she even writes this article in the Huffington Post where she says, I used to be a vegetarian, but because of this book, now I'm a vegan. They announced, Jonathan Safran Foer and Natalie Portman, that there's going to be a documentary made out of Eating Animals. And that Natalie Portman would be the producer.
I didn't know about this.
Yeah. And so soon after, there's this gossip site that publishes this rumor that Natalie Portman and Jonathan Safran Foer have just been writing emails back and forth. And then, according to this gossip site, Jonathan Safran Foer went home, told his wife that he was in love with a very intellectual movie star, mm-hmm. broke up his marriage mm-hmm. without telling Natalie Portman first.
Oh.
Then went and wrote an email to Natalie Portman confessing his love, to which she said no.
Yeah, that's a
I don't like that.
Because she was married and is still married to the dancer Benjamin Millepied.
I don't like that. Like, to do that, you have to assume that, like, the feelings are reciprocal, right?
Well, it sounds like he did assume the feelings were reciprocal.
I think he was maybe too confident.
Yes.
Yes, in his love.
He had a lot of success in his life.
Hubris.
Hubris.
I believe is the word.
But I mean, I just want to be clear. This is a rumor. Jonathan Safran Foer himself has denied it. And I mean, like, the emails between Jonathan Safran Foer and Natalie Portman, mm-hmm. nobody's seen them. So nobody actually knows if they exist. But there was a lot of talk. Then it's, you know, everything's kind of quiet for a while. And this is my favorite part.
This is, I think, the part I know. This is a very intense part.
So that was 2014, right?
Okay.
In 2016, Jonathan Safran Foer and Natalie Portman are both working on new projects.
Separate new projects.
Yes, separate new projects. And so they do this promotional piece in T Magazine. Mm-hmm. And
the New York Times Magazine.
The New York Times Magazine, in which they are going to write new emails, Jonathan Safran Foer and Natalie Portman, to each other, you know, talking about their outlooks on the world and the projects that they're working on.
Weird.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just so painful to read.
Is it two people trying to impress each other with their intellects?
Yes. And everyone else. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean,
it bums me out.
Do you want to just read a section?
Sure. Okay. Okay. So this is Jonathan Safran Foer. It's almost 6 o'clock in the morning. The boys are still asleep. I can hear the guinea pig stirring, but that might be the residue of a nightmare. People often refer to aloneness and writer's block as the two great challenges of being a novelist. In fact, the hardest part is having to care for guinea pigs.
Oh, boy.
I want to crawl under the desk.
It just sucks because it's also like, I feel like I wrote letters like this in like sixth grade.
Yeah, but you had the good sense not to publish them.
Well, no one was offering.
It's not an email.
Right.
Nobody writes that in email. What?
It's like you can hear the scratch of the quill.
No, I disagree. I totally would have written that in an email to try and impress someone, but I definitely would have been like, if the New York Times came to
also,
me and was like, hey, I want to publish this, I would be like, hard pass on this.
The hardest part thing, like, that's not like a fucking email.
Here's another one.
Oh.
Here's Natalie Portman. An ex-boyfriend of mine used to call me Moscow because he said I was always looking out the window sadly, like Moscow. Like some Russian novel or Chekhov play. I have that longing, yearning, it's better over there tendency.
Natalie Portman, what are you doing?
Oh, what? God.
That makes me think that maybe, whatever, I don't want to speculate on the lives of other people, but does it sound like they had an emotional affair and then he just overread it? Just like stay away from that whole country.
Right.
Moscow, longing, no. <Yeah.
laughs> There is a part where she kind of out of nowhere writes about how Millepied, her husband, makes her laugh a lot.
Right, the way you like bring up your boyfriend at a party when you run into when someone who's flirting with you too much.
Yeah, someone flirting with you. It sucks.
I get that, like, they're rich and famous people, and, like, their failures are fine to laugh at. I feel bad. Like, I feel bad for him. I feel bad for her. It's just like, oh, man.
Yeah, yeah. That's tough.
And, like, again, I mean, nobody knows if Jonathan Safran-Foer even had feelings for Natalie Portman in the first place. But people know about this rumor. And I think that people were like, if everyone knows this, why are you guys writing emails in the New York Times?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you guys got bad advice.
Yeah. Yeah. And how is there not somebody close to you to just be like,
don't do this. Do not do this. This is the worst.
Also, I feel like in particular, the New York Times, one of the things that they know how to do as a newspaper is like, they'll have things that are, it'll be about like a rich person's wedding. And the text of it is like, look how grand it is. But they know that this is just for everyone to read and hate. And they will like completely set up somebody like this. And I feel like this is just that. Like the person editing this must have known that like,
this
oh,
is
God.
The this is like the New York Times' version of a reality show.
Yes.
They produce them into like doing something that everybody would hate watch.
Sit down in front of the camera and talk about
oh man,
the residue of your nightmares.
It's just gonna be a guinea pig.
There you go.
Okay, so wait. So just like slightly going back to the tweet, I feel like what I now understand, like the thing that Jonathan Safran-Foer and Natalie Portman represent is just like the relationship between somebody, like they want somebody, they foolishly think that it's going to happen in like a crazy, like act of hubris, and it's not going to happen. I don't understand how that relates to basketball in any way.
Right. What does that have to do with the New York Knicks?
Yes.
All right. Well, that, okay. I'm now going to explain that part to you after the break.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Tafeltrauben 650 Gramm für nur 2,99 Euro. Oder Kulturheidelbeeren 125 Gramm für nur 1,39 Euro in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Okay, so now we're at the sports part.
Now we're at the sports
part. Also, it's so weird that this tweet is a crossover of whatever.
No, that's why it's like such a, it's such a crazy sweet spot. Like Nabil put it in our basketball Slack channel with this note saying that the audience Venn diagram for this incredible meme is so small. But it is.
Nabil.
It's Nabil and me. Because I'm not even sure Jessica knows.
Jessica's only on one half.
Yeah, she's on one half of it. Okay. So now you know that in the world of this meme, Natalie Portman is NBA superstars. They'll now offer max contracts.
And it's supposed to be contracts.
No, it's not. That's just okay. It's supposed to be contracts.
Got so excited that he had such fire on his hands.
Got so excited with his meme that he forgot to put the C in contracts. And then the Jonathan Safran-Foer side of the picture is the Knicks.
Okay.
All right. Let's start simple. Do you know who the Knicks are?
I feel like you can presuppose a certain lack of knowledge, but this is just insulting.
PJ, do you know who the Knicks are?
A New York City-based basketball team.
Yes, exactly.
Blue and orange font.
Yes.
Kind of a purpley blue.
So, Knicks fans, they are the saddest fans, I think, in the entire NBA, because the Knicks last won a championship in 1973 and have not won since then.
Which is weird because they're a New York sports team. You'd think they would just have a bunch of money and buy all the players.
Yes. So, which is, it's crazy.
Huh.
And it doesn't make any sense because the Madison Square Garden is one of the most storied stadiums. It's like the limelight. Like, everybody wants to play in the garden. It's like, there is no reason that the Knicks should not be on the same level as the Lakers.
Okay. Is there like one thing that has happened?
There is one thing that has happened.
So what is the one thing?
Do you know the family that owns the Knicks, the Dolans?
I know something really wonderful about the Dolans.
Now, I'm afraid to say, so this is the level of Knicks fan. There are Knicks fans in this building who, like Cedric, if you're out there, I know this is painful. And part of it, don't come at me, all right, man?
What are you afraid to say?
But like, it's so painful. Like being a Knicks fan is so painful that he's just going to like, I know this is going to be like an hour and a half long conversation where he's like, yes, everything you said is true, but like we're fixing it. We're going to address it.
But it's not like, it's not like art. Like you can tell if a sports team is bad because they don't win.
I'm telling you. All right. So the Dolan family, they are this family. They originally came from Ohio, Cleveland. And the senior Dolan moves his family out to New York City to pursue his dreams. And he starts this small cable company that grows to become Cablevision, you know, an enormous cable company.
Yeah.
And the family becomes super powerful and wealthy. And they go on to purchase sort of famous landmark New York City institutions and real estate, such as Madison Square Garden. They purchased the Rangers, the hockey team. They purchased the Knicks. And then in 1995, the senior Dolan Charles hands the business over to his son, James. And James is sort of developing this reputation as sort of like this blustery, brash guy. His hobby is like racing yachts. Like the full-on New York rich person sort of.
Master of the universe.
Yes, exactly. So for just as an example, well, let me just give you a question. If you were the wealthy scion of this big family that had moved to New York to pursue the scrappy ambition of starting this cable company that had then been acquired for billions of dollars, and you had your own passion project.
This is what I know about.
What would that passion project be?
I know about this. This is the one thing I know about sports, or James Dolan is like one of my favorite things that exists in the world. Are you talking about JD and the Straight Shooters?
I am talking about JD and the Straight Shooters.
It's so good. It's so good. Okay, so Alex.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, a huge band will come to New York City, like Fleetwood Mac.
Sure.
Or the Eagles. And when they get to New York, and only New York on their tour, this weird thing will happen, which is that the opening band...
Oh my God, are you serious that his band plays with them?
The opening band is JD and the Straight Shooters, which is James Dolan, and then just like a bunch of session musicians who are like young, and him, who's this like old CEO guy playing like horrible, like him trying to do boomer rock at Madison Square Garden.
Right. It's you're right about everything, except it's one minor correction. It's JD and the Straight Shot.
JD and the Straight Shot.
In answer to your question, if I had a passion project, it would be to make a pinball museum.
So much less offensive.
So do you guys want to watch his most recent music video?
Yes.
Okay, so this is like one of their
I can't believe we're getting to talk about this.
In the morning, I get the news.
It's a montage of people looking at their phones and newspaper press.
Always someone telling you how to feel, what to do. I know you care and it feels unfair, but all this hate will never repair the grave.
So it's like, it's all these images, these split screens of like
Trump versus Hillary.
Trump versus Hillary, Occupy Wall Street versus like Magnate. And it's this sort of like boomer plea for, I guess,
the healing power,
of billionaire rock.
What I'll say about the song you just played is like, the musicianship's actually good. And then he starts singing and it just sounds like garbage.
Well, why do you think that might be?
I don't know. He didn't auto-tune enough, I guess.
No, but he also hired probably really fucking expensive musicians.
Well, that's like, what I know.
Hired the best musicians out there.
And
I know.
They get to play Madison Square Garden, but they have to play karaoke tracks for Mr. Burns.
Oh, man. So, okay. So that is James Dolan. And in 1999, he is the person put in charge of running the New York Knicks.
Okay. Singer, songwriter, basketball owner.
Exactly. And I'll just say this. Like, before 1999, the Knicks had been in the playoffs 12 straight seasons, the previous 12 straight seasons. after James takes over in 1999, it's a train wreck losing streak of epic magnitude.
Huh. So what kinds of things does he do?
All right. So many things, but just to give you a couple of examples, like one, so he wanted to hire this big time NBA star, Carmelo Anthony, right? And so he traded all the good players on the Knicks in order to bring on Carmelo Anthony. And then Carmelo Anthony is like by himself, like this one lone superstar on this team of like really lousy players, and the team sucks. And Carmelo Anthony is sort of mired in mediocrity for the better part of a decade. He's like the one star on a team that can't win.
He needs like literally someone to pass.
Someone else has to be pretty good. So, otherwise you can't do it. One person alone can't do it. Another thing Dolan did, he hired his friend Isaiah Thomas to coach the team. And Isaiah Thomas had been this big star as a player, but then he turns out he's not a very good coach. And they just go on this huge extended losing streak. And then Isaiah Thomas like has all these personal issues and he gets involved in like a sexual harassment scandal.
I feel like I saw headlines about that.
Yes. It was just like all these horrible headlines and all these horrible things happened with Isaiah Thomas. And like Dolan would just for the longest time refuse to get rid of him. Just stuff like that. So this is the guy who's in charge of the Knicks. And we're about to get to the part where
the meat of this thing. This Natalie Portman, Saffron Foer, NBA crossover.
Knicks fans have been living this with like decades now. Decades of obscurity, like futility, and like this like poor management. And we come now to June 2015.
Okay.
The NBA draft. Okay, so the Knicks, because they're bad, the one good thing about being bad is that you get to get a high draft pick.
We know this from Trust the Process.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so they have a pretty high draft pick. They're going number four. And by this point, everybody's primed, like Dolan's going to screw it up because he always screws it up. Okay, so in 2015, this is who they draft.
With the fourth pick in the 2015 NBA draft, the New York Knicks select Kristaps Porzingis.
Porzingis.
Latvia.
Everyone's booing.
Yeah. Watch. Look at the reactions.
Knicks fans are covering their faces and just doing every physical expression of exasperation.
Look at the little boy. Is it the little boy?
Yeah.
It's the kid that's crying.
He's like giving the thumbs down.
This is a compilation of like reactions to this.
NBA draft. The New York Knicks select Kristaps Porzingis.
Oh my God.
Just someone,
a guy who just collapsed on his floor in his apartment.
What the f*** did they do? Who the f*** is this? Who drafted this fucking kid? You stupid motherfuckers!
Okay, so it's a random 7'3" dude that nobody's ever heard of named Kristaps Porzingis. And they're just like, oh my God, Dolan's done it again.
Yeah.
All right? So like people are really, really mad. But then something amazing happens, which is Kristaps Porzingis turns out to be amazing.
Really?
Yes. He turns out to be this, like, one of these, like, new kind of players. He's 7'3", which is really tall.
I know.
Yeah. And I always forget what I have to explain. But, you know about, like...
Most people aren't even 7'1", Alex.
You know about the average heights of humans, right?
When they're babies, they're even higher.
Anyway, he's 7'3", but he can like move like a gazelle, and he just becomes this amazing player. Here's a highlight reel. Let me just. You want to watch some Porzingis greatest hits?
Yes.
All right, here we go.
I wonder if I'm going to be able to tell that he's good.
Ntilikina finds Porzingis. He's got Nowitzki on him. A couple of fakes, crossover.
So that's him.
Porzingis with the slam.
He looks like a grown-up playing in a kid's league.
Yeah,
like he's just so much larger and faster than everybody.
The Porzingis masterpiece tonight, and more chance of MVP.
He becomes this, like, iconic. He's like this idol.
Yeah.
For Knicks fans, right?
Yeah.
And then on January 31st of this year, they traded him.
Why?
I don't know.
Why?
You know, I'm not a sports fan, but I feel really mad for them.
That is exactly what every single Knicks fan in existence asked.
I feel like Alex is going to become a sports fan just because he realizes there's one more place he can be angry all the time.
Like, I know, because you love...
You get to yell.
That righteous resentment that you were feeling right now.
But...
I know. So... we don't really know what happened. There was a lot of talk at the time that like that Porzingis was really unhappy, possibly because of how badly mismanaged the Knicks were and how bad they were playing. And, you know, he didn't want to end up in the sort of Carmelo Anthony situation where he's just like the one lone good player on this struggling team. Whatever. We don't know for sure, but whatever it was. From the point of view of the person who made this Natalie Portman, Jonathan Safran Foer tweet, once again, the Knicks have squandered their chance to be actually good.
Now I know what my parents felt like every time I was like, hey guys, I enrolled in community college again. And this semester, I've got my shit together. I'm going to study. I'm definitely going to do a good job.
Right. I know. So what the Knicks management is saying is that, like, this is okay because now Porzingis's contract, we don't have to pay Porzingis all this money. So we have now we have cap space. We have room.
Because the whole thing with the NBA is, like, in an effort to make it so the rich teams don't just win, there's like a salary cap, but you can only spend so much money on your players.
Yeah. So what Knicks management is saying basically is like, it's okay, we've gotten rid of Porzingis, so we can spend his salary. What we would have been spending on his salary, we can spend that on other really good players. But then people are looking at that and being like, well, you're not going to be able to attract those players because everybody's going to feel like Porzingis. Nobody's going to want to come and play for you, James Dolan. Have we reached yes, yes, yes?
Yeah. This is a real sad one. That's what makes me feel really sad.
I know. It's just like all about like hope and disappointment and striving and looking like a jackass.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to run it back?
Yeah, sure. Alex, you run it back. Yeah.
Okay, so this is a tweet by Michael Cayley at MC underscore of underscore A. And it is a picture of Natalie Portman and Jonathan Safran Foer. And underneath Natalie Portman, it says, NBA superstars, they'll now offer max contracts. I think it meant to say max contracts. And on Jonathan Safran Foer's forehead, it says, the Knicks. And so in the world of this tweet, Natalie Portman is all of the incredible professional basketball players that the Knicks supposedly are going to get now that they've traded away Porzingis. But since they are Jonathan Safran Foer, they are dramatically overestimating their ability to attract good players.
Right. And also, I guess the Knicks have like traded Porzingis away before they've actually found the players they're going to get. So it's like one more way that they
are. Yeah.
So they think it's going to work out. They also could just like end up alone in their sad apartment.
Exactly.
The remnants of a nightmare. All right. Thanks, Alex.
Thank you.
Reply All is hosted by PJ Vogt and me, Alex Goldman. We're produced by Shruthi Pinnamaneni, Fia Benin, Damiano Marchetti, Anna Foley, Jessica Young, and Emmanuel Jochi. Our show's edited by Tim Howard. We're mixed by Rick Kwan. Fact-checking by Michelle Harris. Our intern is Christina Ayele DeJoso. Special thanks this week to Nabil Cholampot and Cedric Shine. Our theme song is by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder, and our ad music is by Bill Buildings. Matt Lieber is a random interaction with a stranger where afterward you don't feel awkward. You can listen to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you in 2 weeks.